Welcome to the Philharmonic Audio Commentary. This is Owen Tracy recording at 9:13 Greenwich Mean Time. Today is January 14th, and of course, today being Friday, it's the big picture, long-term audio for the various different asset classes. First, let's have a review of what's been happening this week, and this week has been pretty dominated by what's been going on in the commodities sector. And the commodity sector generally has been really very firm over the last 10 weeks, particularly in this grain and bean complex, and corn moved on to a new recovery high in here today. Soybeans has also been firm, and wheat, which was an early leader, has deteriorated a little bit in here today. Rough rice was also a little bit firmer. This year has started off with some of the markets that were most overextended relative to their 200-day moving averages, moving into periods of consolidation and mean reversion, and a good number of the markets that didn't do very much at all in 2010, moving to outperformance. And that has been a particularly stark contrast in here this week. So India, which was really one of the better performers in 2010, went up, tested its high back in November, and has now pulled back to test its 200-day moving average. It's been led the whole way by the bank sector. Banks are suppliers of credit, and you can't get a really big bull market going unless those that are supplying the credit to fuel it are doing well. So banks have often tended to lead, and they've certainly led in the Indian market. They led all the way up. They bottomed early. Were relative strength leaders the whole way up. They topped out early, and now they're leading to the downside. So that really is a bit of a worry. That is being fueled by the inflationary pressures that have been making headlines in India, with food prices going up hundreds of percent. And that is necessitating a much tighter stance by the monetary authorities, and we can anticipate that interest rates are going to continue to rise. And the fact that the food and price inflation has been so badly handled by the government is contributing to a loss of confidence in the government's ability to manage the economy, and people are starting to take a little bit of profit in here. Now, the medium-term trend remains reasonably consistent, other than the fact that the market has pulled back sharply over the last 3 weeks in particular, but it's coming back to the 200-day moving average. It bounced well 2 days ago. I gave up the entire advance yesterday, and was in negative territory again in here today. So the 200-day moving average is certainly being tested. This is a natural area where one might expect support to be found, but we need clear upward dynamics sustained for more than a few days to really begin to indicate that demand is returning in this area, and more importantly, the short-term progression of lower highs need to be taken out to really indicate that demand is getting the upper hand, and we haven't seen that just yet, so there is potential that India, which had become reasonably overextended, is now actually moving into more of a corrective phase and could spend a good deal more time consolidating in the region of or below that previous high. And there's a large number of markets are in a reasonably similar situation. Indonesia, which really made headlines last year for the remarkable outperformance of the market, has been ranging for the better part of 4 months, and it broke down from that range earlier this week and has so far not succeeded in pushing back up into that overhead range. So we may be in for a period of somewhat swifter mean reversion in that case as well. And if we move away from some of those better performing stock markets in Asia and look, for example, at perhaps some of those in Latin America, then you don't have the same degree of selling, for example, in the Chilean market, but the Colombian market has basically been going sideways for the last 4 months. And the Peruvian market, which was a remarkable performer over the last 3 months, has also pulled back into a reactive phase. There's also been some of the frontier markets, which had done so remarkably well over the last 2 years, but have been prone to political upheaval in the last couple of days, particularly in Tunisia, but also in Bangladesh, and those markets are pulling back heavily. So there's there's a wide degree of evidence that in stock markets of all hues, particularly in the emerging markets, that those that have become most overextended are now moving into mean reversion phases. The exception to those markets that did best last year is technology, and technology-led markets are still in positions of relative performance. The Nasdaq was firm again in here. Again in here today, it was up 0.75% and pushing on to new recovery highs, and that's being led by the biggest share in the index, which is Apple, which continues to push on in a remarkably consistent advance. It's just broken out of the most recent of its relatively minor trading ranges, and while becoming increasingly overextended, there's it the The uptrend has done nothing wrong in terms of the consistency of the advance, and because it has moved so much, it's also a remarkably consistent uptrend. So then, also very difficult to, or sorry, very easy to manage in terms of where one would put stop losses, and the an MDL or a midpoint danger line stop for something like Apple now would be quite appropriate, and it is very interesting if one were to go to the chart library and contrast Apple with Nestlé, because Apple has been a relative strength leader. It's a leader in the technology sector, and it's the biggest share in the Nasdaq, and it's leading to the upside. And while it's probably getting to what could be termed nosebleed highs in here at the moment, it hasn't done anything to really scare any of those people that are buying it at these levels, and in which case a consistent trend is a trend in motion. And as long as it's in motion, it will continue to go on and make new highs and have small consolidations and continue to advance. Now, Nestlé is the biggest share in Switzerland, and it's one of the, if not the biggest, food company in the world. It was also a relative strength leader. It went right up to test its highs over the last 2 years, consolidated in that area, reverted to the mean, defined by the 200-day moving average, and then broke upwards. Hasn't been able to sustain that advance, and has pulled back. It's taken out a midpoint danger line stop, and it broke down through the 200-day moving average this week. So that was also a remarkably consistent advance. Then it had a larger consolidation. Now, we might rationalize that by saying that, okay, this thing has come back to the all-time high, but it is a bigger consolidation, and that was at least a warning shot that something had started to deter buying pressure. It broke upwards, was unable to sustain the upward break, which suggests that there's plenty of supply above the market. It's now pulled back and it's taken out what we term as a midpoint danger line stop at the chart seminar, which is a stop in the middle of the range within a consistently trending market, and it's pulled back and gone through the 200-day moving average where it had consistently found support previously. So these are major points of concern for what had been a consistent trend in the past, and it does suggest that something like Nestlé is encountering higher input costs from surging commodities, and that it's probably going to have a more difficult time of it in the short to medium term, provided commodity prices remain at least close to what have been all-time highs. So that is an example of a trend that was remarkably consistent on the upside, lost its consistency characteristics, and those are all warning shots. And if we go back and look at Apple, Apple remains remarkably consistent. When we know what a consistent trend looks like that has gone wrong, then we can script what Apple would look like when it eventually goes wrong, because it will fail to sustain upward breaks. It will move into much longer ranges, and it will start to break down into previous ranges, and it'll start taking out progressions of higher reaction lows and start taking out its 200-day moving average. So those are the types of things that one would be watching for. But of course, Apple isn't the only technology company that's doing phenomenally well. And of course, one of the reasons that technology remains a relative strength leader, not just in the USA, but also in other technology-led markets such as Israel or Taiwan, is that technology is increasingly becoming part of the daily lives of just about everybody on the planet, and certainly all of those in the expanding middle classes. The fact of the matter remains that we're in the greatest urbanization in history, and the fact that GDP growth is exceeding population growth in much of the world today is helping to expand or raise hundreds of millions of people out of poverty, expand those middle classes. That's creating greater purchasing power for an increasing number of people, and they're increasingly spending it on food, on consumer goods, and on the infrastructure that we have taken for granted for in the West for a considerable period of time. So that is helping to drive secular bull markets in everything that relates to urbanization, and it stretches from the most basic of infrastructure projects all the way through to luxury goods. And those are big secular themes. The kinds of companies that can sell products to the expanding global middle class have been doing phenomenally well. And though there is a large number of those companies situated in the USA and indeed in Europe, Europe has also been in the headlines this week. There was concern earlier this week with a Portuguese debt auction, which was reasonably small at only about half a billion, and subsequently midweek with Spain and Italy, I think, auctioning I think about 9 billion together. And those auctions have been received reasonably well. So the euro has been taken out of the intensive care unit for the short term at least. Those concerns that continue to hang over the euro aren't about to go away. And inflationary pressures are beginning to rise within the eurozone. So the ECB has taken on a large number of additional mandates over the last 2 years, but it's really only got one mandate that it has specifically been written into law that it needs to watch out for, and that's price pressures. So if inflationary pressures are rising globally, and they are beginning to be noticed, particularly in Europe's better performing markets, which are export oriented and benefit most from the weak euro, then there is the potential that we're going to see interest rates starting to push up, and that will put additional pressure on those peripheral countries where even the current weakness of the euro is still way too strong for peripheral countries such as Ireland and Greece and Spain and Portugal and probably even Italy. So that contradiction is going to be tested and retested over the coming years. And there is enormous political will to help support the euro. So that doesn't mean it's, well, that means that it is not going to disappear overnight, but it isn't going to become a phenomenally strong currency either. And that middle ground where it's too weak for strong economies in the euro core and too strong for peripheral countries on the outside, is increasingly going to be tested this year and potentially even into next year and the year after, because these debt problems are going to have a very long date on them. Against that uncertainty in the Eurozone, the USA is to a certain extent has a degree of confidence about it, with the economy beginning to turn upwards, and so many of those markets which have been ranging for the better part of a year are now pushing up. They're either breaking out of year-long ranges or they're moving to positions of relative strength, and Wall Street is certainly among those. I'm going to post a comment of the day in about 15 minutes after I finish this audio, and I've referred back to a number of lists of dividend aristocrats that I posted back in September, because there is a hardcore of US companies that have held their dividends for a considerable period of time, not just a few years, but sometimes even decades. And there's even a number of those companies where they are dominant within their specific niches. They offer leverage to the global economy, and a good number of them are yielding more than US treasuries right now. So one has the potential for capital appreciation and a relatively sound dividend for a reasonable number of those companies. And they may not have the sexiest returns, but from the perspective of a conservative investor, particularly those types of investors who have ridden through two major bear markets in the S&P, then betting on companies that have leverage to the global economy looks like a pretty sound investment thesis for someone that isn't looking to who's looking for reasonably well risk-adjusted returns, I think is probably the best way of putting it. So Wall Street is doing really quite well, and interest rates aren't going to go up in the short term in the US. Deflation is still too much of a threat for interest rates to head higher in a meaningful way anytime soon. But interest rates are definitely going up in Asia. They started more than a year ago at this point, and the majority of Asian countries are behind the ball in terms of tackling inflation, and that's something that they're going to have to try and get on top of. China raised the reserve requirements on its banks by another 50 basis points today, and that has certainly put a brake on the large cap A-share market on the mainland. But the developing consumer economy in China is doing very well indeed, and is better represented by the B-share market, where the healthcare and consumer stocks and indeed technology have a much greater representation because they're comparatively small compared to the banks and developers and export-oriented companies that are muscles in the A-share market. And the B-share market is doing really very well indeed. The Hong Kong market and H-share markets are doing equally, moving to positions of relative strength, as indeed are larger cap markets or more developed markets in Asia, such as Singapore and Taiwan. So, but these were also markets that didn't do very much at all in 2010. So we have had a certain amount of rotation out of markets that have become relatively overextended and towards markets that have room to become overextended relative to their 200-day moving averages. The greatest urbanization in history is creating considerably more demand or per capita consumption of just about all commodities. And this has been a week in which the CFTC and indeed the Fed have been talking about the speculation that helped to drive commodity prices to such incredible heights back in 2008. And copper today is at 443 cents. It found support in the region of 425, and it's pushing back up towards that 450. It's sustained the move above $4. And that's not something it's done before. So we have a key raw material at all-time new highs. Feeder cattle have broken out of a 7-year range. Cotton, although probably susceptible to mean reversion, is establishing itself above the dollar level, and it hasn't done that in at least 30 years. So we're now seeing that commodities that are literally indispensable to the global economy are pushing on to new nominal highs. And in terms of their inflation-adjusted performance, there is a large number of agricultural commodities that are breaking out of inflation-adjusted downtrends. So this inflationary pressure that is being felt now and is being exported from the Asian region in particular, or probably more correctly, emerging markets generally, is likely to be a dominant theme for a considerable period of time. And with that in the background, we can look at US government bonds and they've been rallying for the better part of 30 years. Inflation really hasn't been a problem until the crisis in 2008, and U.S. Treasury yields hit an accelerated low back in 2008. They retested it in September of last year, and yields have recovered somewhat. So there's something that is common to just about all bull markets, and that's that supply explodes at the top of the market. And we have companies and countries racing to issue as much debt as possible and to lock in such remarkably low yields for the long term. When you have companies issuing 50-year bonds and countries issuing 100-year bonds, then they don't have a very optimistic view about where inflation is going to be in the long term. They're betting that inflation is going to be worse later, so they are borrowing as much as they can at such remarkably low levels. And if their view of inflation is that bad, then do we really want to be lending them our money? Because if inflation does become a problem, not just in the short term, but over the medium term and potentially even the long term, then bonds at these levels are going to be remarkably bad value. And that would suggest that anyone paying anything close to the highs that were seen back in September is likely to have a very bad investment on their hands for a considerable period. Definitely when one takes into account how long these things are before they mature. So there's a good possibility that major rallies in government bonds are going to be shorting opportunities for a considerable period. But this is still the base formation, and one of the, well, if we refer to a base formation as a type 3 bottom, and a type 3 bottom is defined by its ranging, its time, and its size. So they're volatile. And certainly you have central banks that are very active within their respective treasury markets or sovereign debt markets. And that means that when they become relatively overextended to the downside, they're susceptible to intervention. It also means that it's more of a trader's market. And there are a large number now of various funds that are leveraged to the performance of various government bond futures. And I don't regard those as investment vehicles. Those are trading vehicles because they will, if they rise at double the speed of the yield, then they will also fall at double the speed of the yield when yields begin to contract again. And that could turn into a very messy proposition for investors that are not nimble enough to spot those changes. So those are trading vehicles rather than investment vehicles. Personally, I think that some of the better ways to tackle this inflationary problem are to concentrate on stocks that benefit from the growth of the global economy and will be able to keep pace with the price rises that will be associated with inflation. And that leads us back to some of those dividend aristocrats. The greatest urbanization in history is likely to be a story with which we will be dealing for not only decades, for not only years, but decades to come. We're at a stage at the moment where there are corrective phases unfolding for a number of markets that have become relatively overextended. But it's important to keep the big picture in mind, because particularly for some of those high growth markets that are susceptible to volatility, then any corrective phases that occur are also going to be phenomenal buying opportunities. And there's been a lot of people complaining over the last year that there haven't been any good buying opportunities. Well, we're likely to be getting buying opportunities in some of these better performing markets of 2010 in the not too distant future. And in the meantime, the bigger cap markets, and certainly the USA, but also in Europe and in Asia, are moving to positions of outperformance, at least in the short term, potentially in the medium term. I think with that, I will leave you for the evening, or indeed the weekend, and wish all the best to all of you.